Blog Talk Radio.
In Dallas, Texas, on Monday, December the 20th. It is chilly and raining in North Texas today. It's beginning to look like Christmas, kind of. I mean, this is not a white Christmas by any chance, but it is a little chilly and raining here in North Texas. As we like to do once a week, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Since this is our last show of 2021, we'll be looking back a little bit at some of the stories of 2021, and I'm sure we'll be talking about a certain gentleman from West Virginia named Senator Manchin. So let me say good morning and hello and happy Christmas, Merry Christmas to our friend Bill Katz. How are you, Bill?
Well, I'm just fine, and Merry Christmas to you. We are approaching the end of a momentous year in politics and looking forward to an even more momentous year in American politics.
Absolutely. And how is the weather in beautiful New York?
Well, let me see. I'm going to turn around, which is the way I measured the weather. Yes. You know, as a writer in New York, I am exempt. I am exempt from going outside at any temperature under 40. So let me look. Well, let's see. The sky is blue. The traffic is moving. I detect that the weather is fair. It's good.
Good. So you can survive another day of New York City.
Well, that I don't know. I mean, you know, we don't know. The current mayor of New York, Comrade Bill de Blasio, will only be in office for, what is it, a week or so? Because he leaves office on January 1st as the new mayor comes in. But we don't know what de Blasio is going to do in these days, because he really has this kind of Samson complex to bring down everything around him. And he's done this for 8 years, so he could pull a fast one at the last second.
Yeah, he's been. It's been 8 years of, I think, some real disappointment for New York City with this Mayor de Blasio. But I guess the big story, Bill, I like to, since this is our last show for 2021, during the course of the podcast today, we'll talk a little bit about 2021 and some of the things that happened, but Senator Manchin, I'm not surprised that he did this, okay? That's, you know, it's a big story. Everybody's talking about Senator Manchin. I'm not surprised that he said no. He's been really saying no for all this time. And I think that Senator Manchin looked at this Build Back Better, BBB, as they like to call it, and said, this is too much socialism, if I can put it that way, too much government. And I simply cannot explain it to the people of West Virginia, so the safest thing to do is to say no. And that's how I look at it. I don't know why everybody's so shocked that a guy from West Virginia would not go along with something like this, Bill. I mean, he sent a lot of warnings to the Democrats, you know, trim it down, trim it down, trim it down, and I guess they didn't. So he's a no. He's a no, and he may have – I'd like to know your reaction and the impact of all of this on the Biden presidency, Bill.
Well, my reaction is this. The Democratic Party, which has lived in a world of illusions for many, many years, has a new illusion, and that is they believe that they are overwhelmingly popular among the real people in the United States. Now, I don't know where these real people live. They seem to avoid public opinion polls because you have a situation where every poll shows the administration dropping in popularity, dropping in approval. It shows Republicans gaining in popularity. As far as the BBB proposal, that does not seem to resonate with the American people. I think the American people feel more like Joe Manchin does, that it is a lot of money with some rather vague objectives, that it will put the government in charge of too many things. And yeah, and I would also point out that the Democrats seem to believe, perhaps because they have not recently checked the batteries in their calculator, they seem to believe that they control Congress by overwhelming amounts. They control the House by 5 votes. They don't control the Senate, actually. It's a 50-50 split. And the vice president, who I believe yesterday was named Kamala Harris, I'd have to check day by day, usually breaks a tie. But they do not have – I don't know who they talk to. I really don't. I don't know who they talk to. But they seem to have a view of America that is very different from a real view of America. And if they had a clearer view – or a more honest view, maybe they could come up with legislation that was more acceptable.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly right, Bill. I mean, this bill passed the House by 2 votes, I think. Less than 5 votes, 2 or 3. And that was before it was looked at by the CBO. I mean, that was before the CBO issued whatever statement they issued. So you're right. I mean, I have no idea what planet these people are living in. The planet that I think you and I live in, Bill, has a president around 40% approval, a vice president who, I don't know. I have no idea what's going on with the vice president. And, you know, all possibilities of major setbacks for them in 2022. So, yeah, I mean, they seem to live in a planet where I guess what they say is very popular. Maybe they're spending too much time watching CNN, Bill. Maybe that's their problem. They need to shut off CNN. I'm not saying they should watch Fox News, but they should stop watching cable news and take the train and visit their districts, Bill.
Well, that would be a good idea. But, you know, the Democratic Party, which used to fancy itself as the People's Party, today seems to be the party of people we've never met. I mean, I'd like to meet some of these people. You know, I get the feeling that some of them are hiding somewhere in a shelter, waiting for the revolution to occur, so that they can come out and be at one with Lenin. I don't know what they should do. It's not the party I grew up in. I was a Democrat for quite some number of years, but this is not the party I grew up in. It's a very bad party. It's a dangerous party. It's a party with a great deal of anti-Americanism in it, and it's a party of weak personalities. What is amazing to me is that is Senator Manchin the only Democrat in the United States Senate to have problems with this Build Back Better bill, or whatever they call it? I mean, the degree of unanimity in the votes in Congress on the Democratic side is very distressing. You would think that the so-called moderates would be out there saying, look, we're not going to go along with this, and, you know, we have to get reelected. But apparently not. I mean, they lie down like lambs, and they allow Nancy Pelosi to decide what their vote is going to be. The fact that in a 50-vote caucus in the Senate, that only Joe Manchin rose. I mean, maybe a little bit Kristen Sinema. She's up there too in that category. But for goodness sake, you would think that 20 or so Democrats would really be dissenting on this, and it would have died a deserved death, and they would have come up with something better. It is a very distressing situation. I think one reason is that they read the national press, which is itself delusional and is itself far to the left, and maybe they think that's the voice of the people. They are wrong.
Well, as someone said, maybe they're spending too much time on Twitter, and they need to cancel
yes.
their Twitter accounts, because Twitter, I think it was Bill Maher of HBO who one time said, Twitter is not the country. Twitter is not even the Democrat Party. But unfortunately, they watch too much. But maybe, Bill, what you're saying is that Senator Manchin is the only one in the Democrat Party who is not afraid of a left-wing primary. Because obviously, you know,
that's
if somebody ran to the left of Manchin in West Virginia, that wouldn't be much of a threat to Manchin. But if you are, let's say, the senator from New Hampshire who's up for re-election, or the senator from Arizona, maybe you are afraid of a left-wing primary. I mean, even Beto O'Rourke, if you can believe this, Bill, has a left-wing primary, somebody from the left who's saying that Beto
really?
Is not left enough. And so, I mean, that really I think that speaks volumes. These people are scared to death of the left, and I have a theory that I like to try on you, as I always like to do, Bill. I actually think that there's probably a lot of Democrats who are winking at Senator Manchin, saying, thank you for bailing us out, or thank you for doing what none of us can do. That's my theory, because I think you're right. I don't know how. I mean, if you're a Democrat and you're looking at this bill, how in the world is this bill going to help the number of small businesses in your district who cannot find workers? I mean, this bill would have made it even more difficult for companies, particularly small companies, to hire workers. I was talking to a lady the other day who is the manager of a pizza place. It's kind of a family business. And I asked her out of curiosity, you know, are you having trouble finding people? And that's, we're talking about Texas, where it's a little bit different here. And she says, yeah, they come in, they fill out the application so they can do whatever the Workforce Commission requires them to do. And then when you offer them a salary, they go, well, let me think about that. 2 years ago, they would have taken the salary on the spot. Now they want to think about it because they can get money at home. That's killing the economies. And I have to believe a lot of senators believe that or know that, Bill.
Oh, they do know it. They do know it. But when you have a party that has really gone in the socialist direction, their attitude is, well, these are the workers of the country speaking truth to power. And the truth is they don't want the jobs. And we are dealing with a party. This is not the party of Roosevelt, Truman, and Kennedy. It doesn't come anywhere near it. And I think what surprises me also, among other things today, is that there is not really any serious talk about a new political party. If the country tomorrow had a new, well-organized political party, center-left, as the old Democratic Party was, I think they would be in a very commanding position politically in the United States, but nobody talks about it.
Yeah, that's the problem. So I guess they're going to say a lot of nasty things about the Senator Manchin, and I suppose that's just going to make Senator Manchin more popular in West Virginia. I mean, I have a hard time believing that attacks from Elizabeth Warren or AOC are going to make a difference in West Virginia, Bill.
Well, if they are really strong attacks by AOC, they'll make Manchin even more popular. Because
right.
I can't imagine her having any standing at all in a place like West Virginia. West Virginia is a very, very conservative state, and a state with old-time conservative traditions. Now, at one time, those traditions found their way into the Democratic Party, and you had people like Robert Byrd, who became the Senate Majority Leader and was a West Virginia senator, but he was a conservative, and that was considered mm-hmm. perfectly normal in the Democratic Party of yesteryear.
Yeah. I've always felt, Bill, that West Virginia is almost like Exhibit A of rural America, that it's a very rural state. You go to West Virginia, yeah, there are some cities, but a lot of it is small towns and smaller communities, you know, spread out throughout the state. And that's very typical of many states when you get out of the cities. So in many ways, I feel like West Virginia speaks for a part of the country, like you say, that used to be Democrat at one point, that, you know, you can drive from Dallas to El Paso, and you have a better chance of seeing a dinosaur than a Democrat. And yet at one time, those were all Democrat regions between Dallas and El Paso. And West Virginia
time,
I think, didn't John Kennedy win West Virginia? I think he did.
He won the West Virginia primary. That was a very important primary back in 1960. And he defeated Hubert Humphrey in West Virginia. And ordinarily, a man like Humphrey would have probably done better had Kennedy not been in the race. But Kennedy came in, won it. I believe it was the first major primary that he won, and therefore took on a great deal of significance. Look, the state of West Virginia is not typical of the United States. That we know.
No.
It's a very poor state. It is below average in education in many things, but it is a very traditional state. And they happen to have a position on issues that is actually more typical today of the Republican Party than the Democratic Party. But Joe Manchin, running as a Democrat, but as a conservative Democrat, has become immensely popular in West Virginia. He was also governor.
Right. And a good governor, from what I understand. He was a popular governor, from what I understand from people who are familiar with the situation. But I do give him credit. He's spoken very – Manchin yesterday was doing interviews, and he's spoken very well of President Biden. He's not taking any cheap shots at anybody, even Bernie Sanders. He speaks well of Bernie Sanders. But, man, compare that what they're saying about him. You know, if I'm Joe Manchin this morning and I'm reading the clippings and I'm watching the news, I have to seriously think about becoming an independent, because I hate to see Joe Manchin is going to – I hate to see what the next party caucus in the Senate is going to look like when he walks in, Bill.
Well, that's a very good point, because the Democratic Party – is far more vicious toward its dissenters than the Republican Party is. The Republican Party has had eccentrics over the years. I remember when Wayne Morse represented Oregon. I believe Wayne Morse later switched to the Democratic Party. But they've had liberal Republicans, Mark Hatfield and others. In the Democratic Party, in the current Democratic Party, dissent is not permitted. It is not a party where you could have really different factions. There was a time when the Southern Democrats and the Northern Democrats didn't agree on much, but they were part of the same party. That could not be true today.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was interesting. One of the critics of Senator Manchin said that, how can a man who represents 290,000 people go against the wishes of 81 million people who voted for President Biden? Well, that person obviously doesn't understand the numbers, because the 81 million people who voted for President Biden, that was a nationwide number. But this person obviously doesn't understand how the Senate works. I mean, Senator Manchin is doing exactly what the Senate was created for, which is to represent the interest of the people of that state. And by voting like he did, he was voting for the people of West Virginia. He wasn't voting for the 81 million people who voted for President Biden. I mean, so
well,
it just seems to me that Manchin was doing what he was supposed to do, Bill.
That's exactly right. He represented what he thought his people believed. And if the case had been reversed and it was a Democrat who did this, they would say exactly that. They say, well, he's representing his people, especially the poor people, especially the minorities, especially the disenfranchised, and he should be considered a hero. It depends on whose ox is being gored. You know, it's the old story in politics. Look, the answer for the Democrats is to get more votes, to get more seats in the United States Senate. That is going to be difficult for them. So every gimmick is going to be tried. I think that there is probably still a deal to be made on what they call the BBB plan. If it were stripped down, if it were stripped of a lot of the socialism, if it was more modest, if the Democratic Party would occasionally show more interest in what people are really saying out there, because they don't. They show the same kind of contempt for the masses as the red groups do in the old Soviet Union. It was the hoi polloi. These are the people we really don't talk to very much, but we represent them very well and we take care of their needs. And I think that is the attitude of the Democratic Party today.
Yeah. I guess one last point about Senator Manchin is that Senator Schumer is threatening to put it up to a vote. In other words, he wants Manchin to vote no when it comes up for a vote. Now, there are two schools of thought here. One is go ahead and do it and force the vote. The other one is don't do it, because you're going to force a lot of Democrats to vote yes for something that is not popular back home. So, you know, it's one of those, I'm not sure. They say that Senator Schumer wants to put it up to a vote so that he can discourage AOC from running against him in the primary or something like that. But I'm not sure putting this up for a vote is going to make a lot of Democrats happy, Bill.
I think it would make a lot of Democrats very unhappy. The squad that you just referred to, which is, of course, AOC and her little Marxist friends, has inordinate power in the Democratic Party. I don't know where it comes from because there are not very many of them. There are six or seven, and they are that, and that's spread between the House and Senate. But there is talk in New York that AOC is going to run against Schumer for the Democratic nomination for the Senate. It's an extraordinary thing because he is the Senate majority leader, and he is the the number one senator, certainly the most powerful senator. For somebody like AOC to come in and say, "I want to depose that senator who has all that clout and all that power in the Senate for our state," is pretty nervy. But and I'm not so sure she's going to do it. I don't know if the polls will give her much encouragement. They will in New York City. But outside New York City, she has no name. And but I do think he has he is right to be concerned, because if she did run and did knock him off, and it is conceivable in a state with as many crazy Marxist voters as New York, if that did happen, she would become the most powerful politician in America. And it is hard for me to believe that anyone could take her seriously, but she could then demand the Democratic presidential nomination. So I think she'll be just old enough for 2024.
That's right.
And she could demand it, and she could say, if you don't give it to me, my people are going to walk. Well, she has about eight people, but their walk seems to take up a lot of space in the Democratic Party.
Well, they sure get a lot of airtime. I've never seen
a
representative who was elected in a campaign of like 10,000 people voted. I've never seen a representative get as much airtime as she does. I mean, she's like, she should get a show at MSNBC because she's there constantly. It's just amazing. I mean, they say that West Virginia or that Joe Manchin represents whatever number of people. I bet that Joe Manchin represents more people in his state than the districts that the so-called squad represents. You know, they if you add them all up, I don't think they have a half a million people in the districts of the squad. I'm talking about the congressional districts, not the Senate. So they do get a lot of attention, and they can scare the living daylights out of you in a congressional primary. I mean, look, they're trying to do it down here in Texas. They're trying to do it to Cuellar, you know, the representative down on the border, who's been very critical of Joe Biden. They're trying to primary him, saying that he should take a different posture about the border. So these people, they're committed and they do what they say. So you got to take them seriously, Bill.
Oh yes, and they have, you know, they get the fanatic vote out. You know, the crazies come out. In fact, they there are on election day. You can see the buses going by saying, 40 crazies on the way, and they are. But the fact is that there are pockets of craziness in American politics, in a way there always have been. But you get these very, very far left voters. You find them concentrated in university towns, in some big city areas, and they will go to the polls and vote for the most far-left candidate they can, just to show that they can do it.
Right. Well, we know of two Democrat incumbents over the last few years who've been defeated by these people, the one that AOC defeated, and there was another one, long-term, Democrat congressman who was defeated as well. So they can win, particularly in these small districts where nobody shows up to vote. They can get the vote out and win, or scare the living daylights out of a Democrat. But I think you may be right. There may be this deal could come back in 2022, but I'm not sure what the incentive for Senator Manchin is going to be to renegotiate this after saying no. And I think there's probably a lot of Democrats who wish that this thing could just go away, so they don't have to worry about it in 2022, because the bill is not popular. That much we can say, Bill.
That's right. Well, we have much coming up in 2022. I mean, the Republicans are frothing at the mouth. wishing the election were held today. And that's the point that we have to caution about. The election is not being held today.
Right.
And we have, what is it, 11 months to the election. And anything can happen in that time. I doubt very much if Biden is going to get more popular, because I don't even think he knows where he is. And I don't know if he knows how to get more popular. But it is possible for an assault on the Republican Party that could have some impact. I think I would be very careful of this January 6th commission, which is basically nothing more than a partisan commission investigating the events of January 6th. I mean, this is an all-Democratic commission, but it does have power and it has subpoena power. And you never know what they could claim is the truth about the Republican Party. It is also possible that the economy could get much better. I don't think it will, but it could. And maybe they'll be the public will be in a more forgiving mood. Also, we always have to remember that the press is very much behind the Democratic Party, and we cannot ignore the power of the press to influence votes. So I'm not counting my blessings just yet. I'm delighted by what the polls are showing, a sharp shift to the right. I'm particularly happy about the fact that within the Democratic Party that there are voting blocks that had been taken for granted that are now beginning to leave the party, or at least weaken within the party. And, of course, primary among them is the Hispanic bloc. And we are seeing day by day evidence of more and more Hispanics leaving the Democratic Party. And when asked, it is the reasons that we hope for, that the party no longer represents them. And when people begin to feel that, they can leave forever.
That's right, and that's we can pick that up on the next segment, because I think that's a very important development, and I think there's a lot of Democrats who didn't see that coming. What's happening with the Hispanics, and I've got a few thoughts about that we can get into in the second half. Let me take a little break, Bill, and then we'll come back and talk more about all of this with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, when you were talking about not getting too confident, coming from an old Brooklyn Dodgers fan like you, what happened 70 years ago this year, 1951, when the Dodgers had a 14-game lead in July. So I think you know a little bit about getting overconfident. So remember the Dodgers of 51. That's what I say to the Republican Party, Bill.
Yes, well, 1951 is not a year I keep on my calendar. It's been banished to baseball hell. But I was sitting in a class and actually heard the shot heard round the world when Bobby Thompson hit that home run off Ralph Branca in the playoffs and won the season and won the pennant for the Giants. So yes, I know what overconfidence can mean.
That's right. And I know that baseball and politics are not necessarily perfectly analogous, but, you know, it's always important to know that you got to win it before you celebrate, and that's what I'm hoping that the Republicans will do. One quick note before we get to the politics. I was looking at this in the paper this morning, Bill, before the podcast. 23 years ago today, we were all arguing about the Clinton impeachment, and I thought it was kind of interesting how that story has completely – I mean, does anybody even remember that that Clinton was impeached 23 years ago today? I guess that's what happens in history. Things really take our – we're passionate about something, and then 23 years later, we read about it in the paper, and it's like, oh, okay, I remember that. I mean, that's kind of the way it is, Bill.
Yes, you know – Bill Clinton appears on television pretty often, and nobody even points out the fact that he was impeached, that he's an impeached president, and also that he was disbarred. You know,
yes.
he's a Democrat and a popular Democrat, and therefore these things are made to just disappear. It's part of the corruption in the American press, and that corruption is as bad today as it ever has been. I mean, the reporting of the news is abysmal. It's absolutely abysmal. And part of that is that people are made to disappear, bad news is made to disappear, and the so-called news organizations don't really report the news. They report the news they want to report and the news that will help their position. The idea of a free and balanced press in America is, I'm sorry to say, an idea of the past. I hope that idea is resurrected, because without it, our democracy is weakened, and without it, it is possible that the people can really turn on the press in their anger over what they see in the newspaper or hear on news channels on television. But bad situation in journalism today.
That's right. Exactly right. Well, you were talking about Hispanics, and it seems like almost every other day there's an article in the press about Hispanics, and there's a lot of different things going on with the Hispanic population, but it seems to me there's two that are very important. The first one is that the Democrats came to believe that all Hispanics are the same, that there is such a thing as a Hispanic. And Hispanic is really one of the misunderstood terms that I've ever had to deal with, because I've never really seen people as I see them more, whether they came from Mexico or Cuba or whatever, or whether they were born here. There's tons of Hispanics born here who don't speak Spanish. So that's the first thing. I think they saw everybody as Hispanic. The other thing is that I think a lot of Hispanics are, like you were saying, Bill, reacting to a party that is going way too far to the left, and they're saying, wait a minute, I'm not a socialist. Wait a minute, I don't think that abortion on demand is a good idea. I mean, that's a problem we're having here. A lot of Democrat women, especially Hispanic women, are saying, well, you know, I'm not for all this crazy abortion stuff. So clearly they're losing the Hispanic vote. How much is it? We will learn more in 2022 or 2024. But when you have a party that needs 70% of the Hispanic vote, or they think they're going to get 70% of the Hispanic vote, and they'll end up getting maybe 57-58%, that's going to have a huge impact, not just on the presidency, but the election in Arizona, the election in New Mexico, and other places where the Hispanic vote is important, Bill.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You look at the various groups that make up the Democratic Party, and they need each one of them to win the national election. The Hispanic vote is the most important of the groups because it is the largest and has been among the most loyal. That loyalty is fading, but there are also other groups within the Democratic Party. I would be very, very surprised if the Asian Americans stayed loyal to the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party has nothing for them. It doesn't particularly like them. It doesn't particularly want them. It doesn't lift a finger to help Asian Americans. And the party is increasingly becoming a party where one group, in this case African Americans, and I say that with no disrespect, clearly is the group that of all the interest groups is controlling the politics of the party today, and other groups begin to resent it.
Right. Well, there's an article that came out, I think I may have sent it to you, that the Asian vote in New York City is the Democrats are losing that vote a little bit because for the reasons you just stated. But I think the biggest issue driving the problems with Democrats and some of their ethnic groups is violence, Bill. The violence in some of these cities is just, I mean, if you're a African American and you live in Chicago, how can you possibly be happy with the leadership that you have, which is 100% Democrat and in most cases 100% African American? I mean, whenever I see these press conferences in Chicago, everybody on that stage is African American, the police chief, the mayor, the city council. So it's kind of tough to blame it on Trump. So if you're living in these cities, how can you be happy? And at the same time, because of the way the politics is, you don't really get a chance to vote for somebody else because somebody else, either the Republicans either don't put up a candidate or really have no chance of winning because of the machine. So it's got to be very frustrating to be an African-American in many of these cities, Bill.
extremely frustrating. And then you ask the question, well, why do they keep voting for the same people year after year who deliver nothing? And I think that's a very complex question. First, they may feel a certain security with a particular candidate because they've known him a long time. But also, it may be simply that the Republican Party, in its usual imaginative way, often abandons people. If they think the vote is going to be so strongly against them, they make no attempt to change it. And
right.
I think that you find in many of these cities, certainly you find in New York City, where there's virtually no organized Republican Party. And yet this past election was an election in which a Republican could have won. And yet they just don't show much interest in it. They did have a candidate, he got a couple of votes. But the fact is, New York City is a city that elected Rudy Giuliani, a true Republican, to the mayoralty not that many years ago. And people forget that, and the Republican Party forgets it. I mean, the Republican Party in New York is the kind of party that is basically owned by whoever gets the gubernatorial nomination, and no matter how he gets it. And that, and then they go into a kind of a deep sleep. But I think it is the lack of opposition, the lack of people to come forward in these big cities. There may be an element of intimidation involved, which has always been true in big city politics. You know, Mrs. Jones, if you don't vote for our candidate, you're not going to get this benefit or that street sign or that traffic light that you've been punished because our opposition doesn't like you, and they're not going to get it for you. And there are plenty of people who believe that.
That's right. No, that's the history of city politics. I think it is interesting on this subject, what's happening here in Texas, where the Republican Party has decided to go into blue areas, the Dallas city itself, San Antonio, Houston, cities that have become more blue in contrast to the suburbs that are more red. And this time around, the Republican Party is going after or nominating people or actually giving money to candidates in some of these blue areas. And they're going for it. They're not taking them for granted. And I think that's a smart move because 2022, if you have a Republican wave, you could easily reverse some of the blue areas. I mean, back in 2018, there was a young Hispanic lady who became the city attorney or Houston County attorney. It's a very important position in Texas politics, whoever the city attorney is. And she won like by 3,000 votes in Houston. And she's in trouble now. She's in deep trouble because the Republicans are going to run against her, and they're putting up a candidate, and they mean to win. So she could go down in 2022 strictly because there's going to be a real effort to win that district. So we'll see. But I like that sign. I like to see the Republicans do the same thing everywhere else, Bill.
They sometimes have trouble getting up in the morning. It's an old problem. We could send them Wheaties. We could send them boxes of Wheaties, and then maybe that'll get them out of bed. But historically, the Republican Party has been a party in too many elections that accepts defeat before the votes are counted. You know, they say, well, you know, this is the way things are. I remember during the period of Republican, basically, banishment from majorities in Congress, and they would have guys like I'm trying to think of his name. They were there just basically to mind the store and to take care of business and take care of the appointments that they were given and the rights of congressmen. But they didn't do very much. I mean, they really were a party that was asleep and a party that accepted its status as the second party. I hope that has changed. I think it has.
Well, I think Trump had a lot to do with that because I think Trump did bring that fighter spirit into the party. And now you have a bunch of people like Governor DeSantis of Florida who gives it right back to you. He doesn't take any crap. He gives it right back to you. Let's talk a little bit, Bill, about these mandates that all of a sudden are coming up again. You have now one court says one thing, another court says another with respect to mandates on the private sector. I'm assuming this is going to go to the Supreme Court. But my sense, Bill, is that most of the country is sick and tired of lockdowns, and they're sick and tired of being told that the world is going to come to an end, that there's another virus. I get that feeling that people just want to say, just leave me alone. I'll take care of myself. I can handle it. And that's it. Just don't give me any more mandates. That's the feeling I have. But maybe I'm wrong, Bill. Maybe you being in New York, you have a different attitude about this stuff.
No, I think you're absolutely right. People are getting tired. And I think also there is a sense among many people, a suspicion, that the Democratic Party really kind of likes this kind of thing. Because in a time of mandate and a time of pandemic, their power is exercised. They like government. They like government solutions. They like government to get involved. And I don't mean to suggest that Democrats like the disease, but I think they like the exercise of the power and that the people are beginning to sense that.
Yeah. Well, one thing they sure like is putting votes in the mail or putting ballots in the mail under the excuse
very much so, yes.
of the virus. And that's what worries me most about this. I'm more worried about that than I am about the medical impact of the virus, because we saw that in 2020. You know, a lot of this stuff, I was always very concerned about dumping ballots in the mail because of the pandemic. The Democrats, by the way, tried to do that in Texas, in Houston, in the Houston area. They decided to put thousands of ballots in the mail, blaming it on the pandemic. Now, the Supreme Court here stepped in and canceled that. But in many other parts of the country, there were ballots in the mail, and, you know, there were ballots going to, let's say, Bill Katz, who used to live in Corona, and then the letter was forwarded to you in Long Island, and you voted in Long Island with a Corona address, for example. Well, that's illegal. You cannot do that. You have to vote in whatever address you're living in. And I think there were thousands of votes in 2020 that were cast like that. Whether they were enough to flip states, I don't know. But the Democrats, they love these mail-in ballots. They sure do. And the pandemic is the excuse for it, Bill.
There's no question about that. The mail-in ballot is a ballot that is loose. It's out there. It's physical. It provides great opportunity for corruption. Whereas a secure voting machine, if it's truly a secure voting machine, does not. The mail-in ballots also don't seem to require voter ID. Voter ID is probably the greatest safeguard against cheating, and it's amazing that we've had this debate over voter ID. Voter ID is used all over the world in democracies. Mm-hmm. It's used in the most liberal states of the United States. Nobody would be without it, but we actually had a serious debate generated by Stacey Abrams that voter ID is really a form of suppression. It's a form of suppression of illegal votes. But it's not a form of suppression of legal votes. And, you know, what the Democrats are working toward in the new voting rights bill that they are sponsoring in Congress, which is their next big thing, is a country that can vote entirely by mail, a country where the balloting is very, very sloppily protected, and thus a country where there can be much hanky-panky, and there will be.
That's right. No, you're right. I'm scared to death of voting by mail. I mean, look, I think my favorite state when it comes to voting is Delaware. Delaware, where the president is from, has some of the strictest voting rules in the country. I think we should all take a look at Delaware, or maybe have the president explain why Delaware has all the rules that they have. But in Delaware, you got to vote in person. And there is some, you know, absentee voting, but it's very restricted. So maybe we should go back to that, Bill, where you vote on election day, and that's it. Just vote on election day. I mean, make it election day again, Bill.
Well, yes. Yes. I think that,
I mean, it is election day, after all. It's called election day, right? That's why we call it election day.
Well, yeah, but
so
it
people vote.
Yes, and now it isn't election day. You have this early voting. I mean, I think that if the Democrats get their way, people are going to be allowed to vote 5 years before the election.
That's right.
get that ballot in because the mail is slow. But I think there is a great deal to be said for the ritual of going to the polls and voting in person and voting in one voting machine without all this stuff around it. And I can understand the importance of absentee ballots. Some people are sick. Some people are traveling.
Yes.
But I think it's been carried much too far. They say, well, it makes voting easier for people. Well, not everything in the world has to be that easy. I mean, you can give a little bit of effort for your country and for democracy, and I really do think people enjoyed the process of going to the polls and feeling their vote is being counted.
That's right. That's right. Now, I agree that there are some exceptions, like absentee. For example, my mother, the last time she voted absentee because we didn't want her, in the pandemic to be voting. We also didn't want her standing because she had a walker, you know, and standing in line with a walker, you know, can be uncomfortable.
Yes.
So she voted absentee, and I have no problem with, you know, with people finding a reason like that, or if you're going to be traveling for business, or if obviously the military. But that represents a very small share of the vote. What worries me is when they're dumping ballots in the mail and they're using mailing lists that are 20 to 30% outdated. Worries me. Yeah, so you're getting a letter, like I said before, you get a letter in Corona, but you now live in, I don't know, wherever. Well, that vote shouldn't count. I mean, if you didn't change your address with the Electoral Commission, that's your problem. That, you know, you're not guaranteed to vote if you forget to change your address, Bill.
Well, that's absolutely correct. And, you know, I mean, in places like Chicago, look, they're used to the idea of a lot of absentee ballots being delivered to cemeteries, and they give it out, you know, they give it out honestly. And people who live in the cemeteries or die in the cemeteries or are dead can
right.
vote. I mean, I've had aunts and uncles voting many, many times. It's a pleasure to see that they're still active. And it shows democracy is really a very, very good system and prolongs life. But the fact of the matter is we laugh at it, but it's actually a very serious matter. It is true that most elections probably are pretty honestly run, but there are enough there's enough hanky-panky to make us worry, especially in a presidential election. I do not have the evidence that the presidential election was stolen, but I'm not prepared to give up the idea. Because having been involved in politics for many years, I have seen areas of the country where more people vote than live in the district. And if that isn't corruption, I don't know what is.
Well, I think Bob Dole, in his farewell speech or whatever it was, said that now that he's dead, he'll find out whether or not he can vote in Chicago or something like that.
He said wonderful.
Yeah,
wonderful.
I thought that was Bob Dole at his best. And maybe a message to the country. Bill, as we wrap up, this is our last show for 2021, so I wanted to get your thoughts on looking back at 2021. And I wanted to start by sort of going back, let's say, to this date in 2020. At that time, you know, we were still arguing about the election, even though the networks, I think, had already called it for Joe Biden. And the big thing was the special elections coming up in Georgia. That didn't
yes.
go well for the Republican. But that was kind of what we were talking about a year ago. But now we're talking about President Biden's problems, the vice president's problems, the economy, the new virus, just a presidency in total disarray. And that, to me, is the biggest story of 2021. I didn't see this coming. I didn't think that Joe Biden or President Biden would be where he's at right now. I thought he would go down like most presidents do, but I didn't think that it would be anywhere near as bad as it is, Bill. I look back and that's my story of 2021, just how bad President Biden's political situation is, Bill.
Well, I think that's correct. And I think that one of the reasons he went down that fast is that in the election of 2020, you can't really say that he won the election. It was Donald Trump who lost the election. People
sure.
just didn't like Trump. They just didn't personally. And so there was no wanting of Joe Biden. I didn't see a single bumper sticker on a bumper. I may have seen them on a wall somewhere or, on a drinking glass, but I didn't see any bumper stickers for Joe Biden. There was no enthusiasm whatever. And so when he took office, people were not looking forward with enthusiasm to the Biden administration. They were saying, okay, we got rid of the guy we didn't like, let's see what this guy can do. And unfortunately, he reveals very quickly that he couldn't do much of anything. And I also think there is some resentment on the part of the people that a man is holding the Oval Office. It is.
Yeah.
The Oval Office, and who obviously is not cognitively healthy. And you don't need a doctor's note to tell you that. I mean,
no.
you see it, and there's a feeling that a man in his condition should not be president.
Well, and the other thing, too, I would add to that, Bill, that I think for many people like me, we get angry at the fact that the media didn't pursue this in 2020. It was obvious in 2020 that the reason they were hiding Joe Biden in the basement, they were using the excuse of the pandemic. But he could have done
yes.
press conferences on Zoom or whatever they call it. I mean, in other words, he was completely kept away from any serious discussion of anything he wanted to do. And the media just went along with it because they were hysterically obsessed with Trump. And now we realize that there's a lot of things that he didn't say, that he never explained. I mean, did anybody ask him, for example, about the border and what exactly he was going to do on the border? It seemed like the only answer he would give, Bill, was, I'm not Trump. We're going to be different than Trump. Well, okay, that's politics is that way. But somebody should have raised their hand and said, okay, Mr. Candidate, exactly how different are you going to be with Trump on the border? Oh, we're going to be more humanitarian. What does that mean? And he never got that kind of questioning, and I think that's why he was elected, because everybody voted against Trump. I agree with you. But nobody really voted for him, Bill.
That's right. And now especially that he has a vice president who is really really scraping the bottom of the public opinion polls, and you're getting into a situation where you not only can be confident in the president of the United States, but you cannot be confident in his successor should something happen
right.
to him. That's a very bad situation to be in. If you look at cases of vice presidents in the past who have assumed the presidency, Lyndon Johnson, no matter what you may have thought of him, was an extraordinarily accomplished Washington figure who could step into the presidency and know what he was doing.
Right.
And you had a case of Gerald Ford stepping into the presidency from the vice presidency, and he too had years of experience, and he was a known quantity. And of course, going back further to the most famous transition of the last century, which was when President Roosevelt died, a giant of politics, a man who'd been elected four times. It is a myth to say that the man who succeeded him was little Harry Truman of Missouri. In fact, he was very carefully selected and was a very prominent United States senator with a real record. You don't have that today. There is really no confidence in Kamala Harris.
There's none whatsoever, and I think that's the real problem for her. I mean, in a way, I kind of feel sorry for both of them, for Biden and for Harris, because I think they were really the two wrong people. I'm not saying that Trump didn't have his problems. He did. A lot of people just didn't like him, period. But I'm not sure that Biden and Harris were the best the Democrats could do. Well, Bill, we're going to wrap it up for 2021. I want to once again thank you for your time and all of your comments. What are you asking Santa Claus? You want to reveal to us what you're asking Santa Claus this year?
No, I have executive privilege, and
okay.
I don't. I would rather not reveal to Santa Claus because I feel I have to protect my office, and so
yes.
I made it. But I'll ask for the usual stuff for the family, and for a good future for our country, and a truly United States. But let's see whether we get it.
Yes, that I think everybody wants 2022 to be maybe a little bit more. I don't know what to say, but you're right. There's a lot of concern about the country right now. So I'm going to ask Santa Claus for a different microphone. I hope I get it, Bill. I hope my microphone needs to be upgraded. So I'm gonna. I wrote him a letter saying I need an upgrade in my microphone, but I also copied my three sons so that they would understand that Santa may need some help from them.
Is your microphone provided by the talk show company?
No, my microphone is mine.
Oh. Okay.
So I, well, the website has a microphone, but the one that I put around my head is mine. So
yes.
So let's just say that I need to upgrade, which is something I've done before. So I'm hoping that Santa Claus will comply with that. But as I said, I sent a copy of my letter to Santa to my three sons because they may have some influence on Santa Claus as well, Bill.
I have a feeling they will. I have a feeling
yes.
they will.
Yes, so I'm hoping that they will.
The vibes are good.
Yes, thank you so much, as always. And have a great Christmas. We'll see you after the first of the year, or we'll chat with you after the first of the year. Merry Christmas to you and all your family and all the readers of Urgent Agenda. And we look forward to 2022 with you.
I look forward to it too, Silvio.
Thank you so much. Our good friend, Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, well, thank you for listening, and we'll get together with Bill after the first of the year and pick up this wonderful conversation that we have with him once a week. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.